This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is former Virginia Senator John Warner, who served as chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, among other positions, during his time in the upper chamber. He is now actively promoting energy reform legislation and was part of a testimony on Capitol Hill to that end today. And, Senator, thank you very much for your time today.
Delighted to be with your audience.
Well, the major piece of legislation on energy that's been introduced in the Senate is the box or carry legislation. Where do you stand on that, and why?
Well, I think it's a very important contribution towards the possibility, underlying the possibility, of Congress this fall, in the last few weeks of its session, enacting a framework of legislation to guide America forward in the years to come. There are not only the valuable work of the Environment Public Works Committee under Senator Boxer, that was testimony we had this morning with two panels. We had an excellent hearing, many witnesses testifying, some for, some against, but that's the way it should be in the Congress, to hear both sides very carefully. And there are other committees. The Finance Committee will be working on this, possibly the Foreign Relations Committee. So there'll be a convergence of probably four to five, to maybe even six committees contributing to a bill which the majority leader, Senator Reid, will put together and hopefully get to the floor later this fall.
Senator, energy reform is a little bit like health care reform in that most people agree that something needs to be done, but there's not a lot of consensus, usually across party lines, about what exactly is the right approach to do this. On the one hand, you have the cap and trade approach, which is certainly the focal point of the box or carry legislation. On the other side, with most Republicans, you have the all of the above strategy with renewables, nuclear, natural gas, oil exploration domestically. Which do you believe is the most effective strategy and why?
Well, in my judgment, the Republicans and the Democrats will have to work together on what we call packages. It's a traditional way to do legislation. For example, I fully support increasing the base and the infrastructure needed to build more nuclear plants for the United States. I also approve, and did when I worked on it in the Senate, I put in bills for offshore drilling. And there are many means by which America can rely, I think, safely and environmentally on its own energy resources, plus nuclear power, to cut down our dependence on foreign imported oil. So my answer to your question is it's going to require compromise. The cap and trade, for example, is a system by which to generate revenues to put a carbon cap, that is a cost on emitting this sort of greenhouse pollution into the atmosphere, put a cost on carbon, and that will generate the badly needed funds necessary to increase the amount of research and development on clean coal-burning technologies, sequestering the gases from stacks, more solar photovoltaic, you know, capturing the sun's rays, wind. All of these things need further research and development and a manufacturing and industrial base, and cap and trade would provide the needed income stream. So it's going to be a question of compromise, and I so hope that we can reach a bipartisan approach to this important piece of legislation, which conceivably will control much of the future growth of America in terms of, we call it green jobs or jobs connected with new ways to develop our energy, clean energy, and all kinds of things. It's such an important impact on the economy. So I do hope we can achieve a bipartisanship on this type of legislation.
Senator, you made a couple of important points there I'd like to follow up on. Number one, in terms of national security, and I know that was your focal point for many years on Capitol Hill, how quickly do you think we need to move away from dependence on foreign sources of oil, particularly from nations that don't really like us very much?
Well, I wouldn't put any time sequence on that. We're an economy that's based on the consumption of carbon burning, whether it's oil or coal or so forth. So time will tell. But in the meantime, we just got to keep going forward, steps at a time, to try and break our bondage which currently so many requirements for importing oil place upon the citizens of our country. But as to national security, that's an important element because, well, of course, the Department of Defense and its men and women of the armed forces are the largest, I repeat, the largest single entity in the whole world in terms of their consumption. But that department right now is moving ahead with a vast array of programs to conserve energy and lessen their dependence on it. So many of the departments and agencies of the federal government are moving out, trying to do their best to conserve energy and to plan for the problems associated with climate change. Now, back to national security. So often when our nation has to respond, say humanitarian response, as we did in the tsunami, that terrible situation caused in a nation where people were flooded and diseased and dying and so forth, we brought in an aircraft carrier manned by American sailors to provide the water supply. We brought in the helicopters flown by other sailors and Marines and others to carry the supplies in. And the Army, the Air Corps, the Air Force often supplies the airlift. So the men and women of the armed forces become the agents to help the United States to deliver humanitarian relief. And in situations like that tragic case in Somalia, where the government was falling, and we decided as a nation to see if we could support it. It didn't work out. It was a tragic military situation. But there again, the men and women responding to the orders of the then president went into that conflict to try and shore that government up. And there are many governments today that are very fragile. And an energy shortage, that is a shortage of the ability for fuel to take care of its people, or food shortage or water shortages, or climatic change can literally topple fragile governments. And on occasion, it's a decision of the president. We've got to go in to try and help the people. Who does he look to? The men and women of the armed forces. So as a consequence, today, the Department of Defense, in its planning of roles and missions for its military, put down a section on contingencies generated by climatic changes, energy shortages, mass migrations, seeking water supplies, and other reasons. So they're at the forefront. They're often the first responders when the United States determines it must intervene.
We're talking with former Virginia Senator John Warner. And, Senator, a couple more questions before we let you go. First of all, you mentioned the economic aspects of energy legislation. You also, as we mentioned before, on some other aspects of the right approach, have two very different schools of thought on what the economic impact of this sort of legislation would be. On the one hand, you have many of the Democrats who say that this would create green jobs, lead our economy in a new direction. Others say that this model in other countries has shown that manufacturing jobs will be lost because of the limits on emissions, and then energy costs will be passed along to consumers as well, and that'll hit in the pocketbook. Which do you see as the more likely scenario?
I would say both scenarios can take place. To some extent, we are going to have to pay a bill for our ability to lessen the greenhouse emissions, to move on away from the carbon economy to a more clean burning of our fuels and renewables like wind and solar and power dams and so forth. So if there's not a clear demarcation between the two, there's validity in both arguments. And those are the issues that are now before the Senate as it's putting together its legislation. Some six committees of the Senate are contributing towards a very comprehensive bill, which I hope will be structured and taken to the floor in the month of November.
Last question, sir, on a completely unrelated topic, but we're 6 days away from the Virginia governor's election. It appears from the latest polls that Republicans are poised to win for the first time since 1997. Now, what do you see as the electorate's viewpoints heading into Election Day?
Well, I hope there's a large turnout. I really do. I think it's helpful to show that our state, we're very proud of the tremendous history of our state and the formation of the republic that we enjoy today. So many of the founding fathers came from our state. I ran for 5 consecutive elections for the United States Senate, and I thank the electorate for electing me. So I think there'll be a strong turnout, and at this point in time, early indicators are that the Republicans might well prevail. And that will send a message across America that there's still a strong two-party system in this country. And I think it's essential that there always be a strong two-party system.
Senator, unfortunately, our time is up. Very good of you to spend your time with us, sir, today. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Former Virginia Senator John Warner, former chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.